So, this morning, listening to the silence here at Wat Buddha Dhamma, it's a very quiet, silent place. The atmosphere, the environment is very beautiful. So, we can distract ourselves with our thoughts. There isn't so much external unpleasant impingement going on. So we can notice this is the way it is. The silence, natural conditions that without a lot of mechanization and things going on, noises of traffic or machinery or whatever, it's like this. So this is a Buddhist way of reflecting. It's not, you notice the words, the way it is or it's like this, is not a description, is it? It's not telling you it's good or bad. The way it is. It's just, it's a way of thinking which helps you to remind you to be aware of what you're feeling in the present. It's like this. Then if you try to describe, if I should ask one of you, would you describe in detail your feeling of this moment? You probably couldn't do it. You probably use, it's okay, or it's peaceful, or, I mean, we have words that we try to express our feelings with, but you're the one that knows what you're feeling, and it's not a word that you feel, it's like, but what you're feeling is like this. And feelings, of course, are impermanent. I mean, you can't feel good all the time or happy all the time. Conditions change, postures change, temperature in room changes, the schedule changes. The changes are inevitable part of this realm that we're experiencing, the saṃsāra-vaṭṭa, the realm of saṃkhāras and change, birth and death. Now there's six elements that they refer to in the suttas. The earth, fire, water, and air are the four elements of change of forms, colors, size, shapes. The saṃkhāras you can describe as, you know, good or bad, right or wrong, beautiful, ugly, whatever. They have quality, they have size, they have shape. Then there's akasa and vijnana, which is space and consciousness. These have no shape. They have no form, but they're here and now. And just the space in this sala, in this meditation hall. But the meditation hall's in space. And the planet Earth is in space. Space has no boundary. Where does space end in terms of here and now? And space has no quality to it other than space. It is what it is. But it's here and now. And I'm talking just through visual consciousness. Through jhakkhu vijnana consciousness, you can actually notice, observe space. And to observe space, then you withdraw your interest and fascination from what you're thinking or what you're seeing. And you're not asking to annihilate anything, but you're not focusing, concentrating on anything, but reflecting on space. And then this gives you perspective. Yeah. You know, we need perspective on forms. The form, you have space. And space gives you the perspective. If you have no, if there wasn't space, you wouldn't have perspective on the forms. You'd be just caught. I mean, it would be impossible. Nothing would, no, there'd be no conditioned phenomena. And then consciousness, vijnana. Consciousness has no boundary, no limitation. And consciousness, if you shut your eyes, there's still consciousness. When you're asleep, there's sleep consciousness. When you're awake, there's dream consciousness. Consciousness, you don't, it doesn't come and go and change in terms of its presence, but in terms of the conditions that we're experiencing. When we're awake, it's like this. Dreaming is like this. Deep sleep is like this. Because you don't, you can't reflect when you're fully asleep. But consciousness doesn't stop when you fall into deep sleep. Consciousness is silent. It doesn't have any quality to it other than knowing. It's the ability to know in a direct way, not know about things. It's not knowing about Buddhism or science or anything like that. It's knowing, the reality of knowing. So you, at this moment, sitting here in the meditation hall, you know. The conscious is like this. Consciousness is like this. Because that's what you are, you know. It's not, it isn't personal, it's not good or bad, right or wrong. And as we begin to recognize, consciousness can know itself. So in the Third Noble Truth, in Nirodha Satya, it's where it can't know, it knows objects as conditions, anicchang, dukkhang, anatta. It discerns, but it's not personal, it's not judgmental, it's not telling you anything other than this is the way it is. All conditions are impermanent. Sape tama anatta, and there's no separate self, conscious self. Sape tama anatta. Now, in the concentration practice, as I've said before, you focus on an object. You have a kasina or the breath or a subject, and then you concentrate on that, leads you to piti, sukha, ekagata. You develop the jhana factors, and that's like yoga exercises or whatever, you know. It's a good mental exercise. But it's still it's still bound to an object, where the mindfulness, sati sampajanya, and Panya, then it's open. It's like a wide, but at this moment, you can be aware of an object or you can let go of everything and just be aware. Like listening. I always described it as listening. So when you're listening, not at for anything in particular, you're not listening to music or for another person talking or anything, but you are in this state of of open attention, listening, then you can begin to notice the what I call sound of silence, a kind of vibratory continuum in the background. Now this I found very helpful because it's always present wherever you are. It's not like it comes and goes, but one's attention to it is impermanent. You forget about it or you get distracted from it. But it is present here and now, full attention. It's not something you can grasp, but something you notice, pay attention to. And then the attitude for this is the kind of relaxed attention, not a tense concentration, but relaxed, open, wide open attention, listening to the sound of silence. It's not really a sound either. But what it is, I don't know, but it is what it is. Now this I've used a lot in my life as a monk. I first became aware of it, actually, when I was 19 years old. And I was in a station at a naval station in San Diego where we were kind of looking after old World War II ships. It was a kind of dreary, ugly place to be. I was very young, didn't like military life very much. So I went off to a monastery in Santa Barbara for a weekend. It was a Episcopalian monastery. And it's quite beautiful by the Pacific Ocean. And it was such a relief to get out of the dreary kind of naval base with its rusting ships and so forth. So on Sunday afternoon, I was walking in the hills outside the monastery, and it was a very warm, sunny day, and suddenly this 19-year-old sense of self, ego, frustration, confusion, emotionally distraught boy, all this dropped away, and I just was with this kind of sound of silence. It's like the ego or the personality disappeared. I didn't know what it was, had no idea. But I do remember that as something that I'm thinking, I wish I could be like this all the time. And that evening I had to return to the naval base, and then, of course, I went back into the old habits and complaining modes of my character. And several years later, I encountered Zen Buddhism in Japan. And that I think that kind of, in some way, resonated with this experience and this Episcopalian monastery in California. But we need this perspective from conscious awareness to have perspective on your personality, your ego, the sense of yourself, because this is very much how we interpret life and experience through these distortions of self-views. And it's insidious because everybody does it, and the society totally believes that we're separate selves, personalities, believing in our gender as our reality, believing in our appearance, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, in the race and social status. All these things are conditions. Now, if we were aware, if we use sati and sampajanya and panya, then we can be aware that it's not about trying to annihilate the ego, but to put it in its proper context. It's conditioned. Some of it's quite useful and way of living in a conventional world, but some of it is rubbish. It's just nonsense that we interpret our experience of life always through these fears and distortions of that we create about ourselves as individual, separate human beings. So the sound of silence or awareness, sati sampajanya, panya, this is the way we have within the confines of a human birth, because we are, you know, we're limited in our form. We experience universal consciousness through this form we call our own body. And so then everything becomes interpreted that I am this body, I am this personality, I am this way. And then we experience life through these perceptions, which are not reality, not real, not based on wisdom or Dhamma. So in Vipassana meditation, you're getting to the source, you know, you're getting to where it all starts, and that the only way to get there is sati sampajanya panya, or mindfulness wisdom. So when the Buddha was enlightened, he made the statement, aparuta de sangha matasa tawara ye sodavanta bamunjantu satang, which always impressed me, this kind of motto I've kept for most of my monastic life. It translates the gate, to the door to the deathless is open for those who are listening, who have ears to hear. In other words, those wake up. The gate, the door, is this ability we have to be mindful in the present moment. It's not about tomorrow or last year or a mystical experience at 19 years old or hoping to get enlightened in the future. It's this ability right now to pay attention. This attitude of letting go rather than grasping things, because grasping is the nature of samsara vata or the conditioned realm. We want the happiness, we don't want the suffering, we want to be respected, we fear being disrespected and disliked, we want status, we don't want to be considered mean and low. We want to prosper. We want to succeed and not fail. These are about conditions of samsara. These are conventions that we live with, because we all have to experience the natural process of age, old age, sickness, death. Now, death is a subject that many brings up fear and confusion in people's minds, just the English word itself. I remember when they were going to publish one of my books, My Mindfulness Path to the Deathless. At first, I just called it Path to the Deathless, and they didn't like the title because it had the word death in. I said, but it's deathless. It's not about well, the word death is there, but it's not about death. It's about the deathless. But they agreed to call it Mindfulness Path to the Deathless. Now, these were publishers of Buddhist literature. And in the UK, where I lived many years, death is, it's not polite to politically correct to talk about it very much. When my mother died in 1989, I was giving a retreat in California, 10-day retreat, and she died the very day that I started this retreat, 10-day retreat. And that was quite a shock, and then have to lead a retreat and be mindful of what you're actually feeling, not try to suppress. And then halfway through the retreat, I had to fly to San Diego. I was near San Francisco during the retreat, and then fly to San Diego for the Roman Catholic funeral. And my sister is a devout Roman Catholic, so we had this big funeral. And death wasn't mentioned at all. It was kind of like she passed on. She's now in heaven with Jesus, and she's happy. This kind of feel-good way of talking about my mother. And so it's avoiding how you're actually feeling when somebody you love dies. It's like this. Grief is like this, rather than thinking they're very nice thoughts. And I'm sure my mother is a very good woman, so I'm sure she was happy wherever she was. But she was 88 years old, and so it wasn't like she died in a way that she lived a full life. She was well prepared, but none of this was consciously accepted. It was all kind of singing folk songs and celebrating my mother as if she were still alive. And then after the funeral, I went to the cemetery, Catholic cemetery in San Diego, and where they were going to bury my mother. And it was, I arrived there, I rode with the coffin in the hearse, and they had the grave already dug, and they had this kind of plastic grass over the hole, so it looked like real grass. And then they had a contraption where they put the coffin on top of this metal contraption on this plastic grass, so you couldn't actually see the grave. And then the priest came, sprinkled water, chanted a few prayers, and we were told to leave. So I decided I wanted to help bury my mother, so I stayed on, and everybody else left, and the grave diggers came and told me to go. And I said, I want to, yes, this is my mother. I wanted to help bury her, you know. And they said, no, we can't do it. We can't even lower the coffin into the grave till everybody's gone. So this is how frightened people are of the reality of what's happening. Reality we can face, we can endure, we can... Grief is not something to fear. It's a natural emotional response to loss of a loved one. It's and to be aware of it is means you're not wallowing in it. You're not making a scene or getting carried away by the emotion, but you're not rejecting it either. There's wisdom there discerning it. It is what it is. And you're willing to feel it. But this is where this consciousness, space and consciousness, give us perspective on conditioned phenomena. It isn't like an indifference towards conditioned phenomena. We're aware of how it affects, how it arises and ceases. It's like this. So these words... The way it is, it's like this, is just a reminder to us, using language to help us to look at something that we might forget about by indulging in grasping the feeling or rejecting it. Now, death is... is what happens to human bodies when anything born dies. And we can see that in nature, in the changing of the seasons, in the world around us. It's a realm of birth and death. The samsara vata, the worldly condition realm, is about being born and dying, about beginning and endings. That's its nature. That's what it's supposed to be. This is natural phenomena. But our relationship to it then isn't being attached to natural phenomena as sankhara, but by being the awareness itself of the changing. By doing that, then we develop samadhiti, or right understanding, or perfect. You know, you can even use the word perfect understanding. Because from these, investigating the first three noble truths, then it's samadhiti. It's not just worldly wisdom anymore. It's perfect understanding of the way things are. And this is actually possible within this human birth. You know, I used to think it was impossible because the power of the body, the senses, the habit patterns, the emotional habits, the conditioning of the mind is so strong, so real, so utterly convincing, until you start looking at it in a different way. But and this is what Sati Sampachanya allows us to do. The gate to the deathless is open. Aparuta de sangamatasa tawara. Amatasa tawara is Pali for deathless reality, amatasa, deathless, door to the deathless. Dora is a door, like a gate or an opening. And this opening then is here and now. It's available to us every moment. And as we begin to investigate in this way, You know, and when you think about it, it can seem impossible. Because the thinking mind, remember, is sankhara. It can only lead to more sankhara and to doubt. So you can't trust the thinking mind or trying to analyze it or reason it out. Just do it. Mindfulness isn't about how do I become mindful. You just be this way. Trust in this. Just awaken. Wake up. How do you wake up? You just do it. So deathless, amatasa, deathless Dhamma, path to the deathless. This is the Buddha, because description, definition is around sankharas. But there is, in the Nibbana Sutra, in the Udana, they have the this very clear, precise statement, Ati Bhikkhave Ajatanga Putanga Katanga Sankadang, which means there, bhikkhus, there is the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. What does that mean? What is unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned? And then you... And this is a statement, there is, it's not like I believe that there is this unborn, uncreated, unborn. It's not about I believe or I think there might be. It's this, when they use the word ati bhikkhave in the script, in the suttas, it's a statement of certainty. There is the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. And then you try to think about what is that? And then it goes further on, because there is the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned, there is escape from the born, the created, the formed, the conditioned. Well, this to me was very, gave me great hope, because I felt trapped within the born, the created, the formed, the conditioned as a person. I felt, I was caught in a cage and in a straitjacket. I thought there had to be more than just this kind of condition experience. But you can't imagine the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. But you can make images. You have views and opinions about the born, they created, the form, the condition. They're good, they're bad, they're right, they're wrong, they're high, they're low, true and false, the best and the worst. So the born, the created, the form, the condition, the body is born. Your emotions are dependent on conditions. They are born, created, formed. Your memories, your perceptions, language, all these, the all conditioned phenomena is like this. And then that which is aware of the born, the created, the form, the condition, then can only be the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. So this is the gate or the door to the deathless. It's just this simple. Like one condition can't really know another condition, because they're created, they're formed, they arise and cease. They have no sustaining power. But what sustains through the arising and ceasing of our emotions, our views and opinions, our feelings, our aging bodies and so forth is consciousness. Consciousness with wisdom is what the Buddha Dhamma is all about. And so it's why it's not doctrinal. It's not about believing in Buddha's words, but in Batibhatta, in practicing in the right way. Like the words like Nibbana, Anatta, Nirodha, when you try to think of them, you know, what is Nibbana? And they describe it as the reality of non-grasping. But also it's used in modern conventional use in pop music and whatnot. They have use it for the best, you know, the ultimate. I had a fantastic Nibbana experience. You know, I really was high, something like that. But actually, it's these kind of words, anatta. Try to figure out with the self view what anatta is. No self. Try to analyze it and try to figure that out. Or the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. And so you begin to understand how your mind works rather than trying to define and conceive Dhamma with language, with concepts. You know, you can't really do it. But you can know Dhamma through awakened awareness, through wisdom. And this is what consciousness, its nature, is just knowing. Now in the conventional world, when we come to what Buddha Dhamma, then the conditions around us, just notice the conditions are like this. when you go on a meditation retreat, it's very structured. It's organized for you, so all you have to do is kind of conform to the schedule that is presented to you. It's told when to get up, when to sit, then when to walk, when to eat. So you don't have to go shopping for food. You just take what is offered and follow the schedule. But the main thing is to observe. And one is giving the opportunity to be awake and attentive to the way things are, where we're not caught in the usual daily life activities of our homes, where we live with our families. So it's like being spoon-fed, you know. It's kind of special situation. So in meditation retreat, regard them as they're specially arranged to encourage this awakened awareness, to cultivate it so you have more confidence. So when you go back to your homes, your families, your workplace, you're more confident in the wisdom, in using wisdom, mindfulness wisdom, even in the daily life that you live. You have more confidence in how to be this aware, be this awareness itself. And you can also begin to accept like other people the way they are, rather than always be critical of them, thinking that they should be some other way. Living in a sangha, in monasteries, the mistakes I've made being head of monastery is always trying to thinking monks should be a certain way. The way I want them to be, in other words. And they're not that way. Each one of us is on the physical level, on the age level, on the emotional conditioning, cultural biases, cultural conditioning. We're all quite different. The conformity that we experience as bhikkhus is the tradition, the bhikkhu sangha conformity to the Vinaya, and that's voluntary. That's not forced on us. We have to ask three times to receive the ordination. But it is a convention. But conventions then are, we're using conventions with wisdom rather than identifying with them. And we can love and hate them or whatever, but the main thing is to observe that whatever it is, it is the way it is. Whatever arises, ceases. Now, if you notice this sound of silence, is very helpful it's about more of a relaxed. It's not something that you grasp, but a sense of resting inside. It's like a kind of electric vibration. And that you begin to, you notice when there's thought, when there isn't. You have perspective on the feelings. It doesn't annihilate anything. And it's not like it's a sound that completely demolishes everything else. It's the background, like space in a room. It's here and now, but it's not demanding attention. So learning to notice it, to pay attention. You can hear it over the years I've trained myself with in really noisy situations, with chainsaws, with pneumatic drills, with lawnmowers, accessing the sound of silence behind the cacophony, the noise of a electric lawnmower. You can do it. Or behind music. So it doesn't destroy, it doesn't dominate, but it certainly, as you begin to cultivate it, then it applies to, you know, traffic jams in Sydney or whatever. Gives you a place to be, a resting place to just accept the way it is when you're caught in difficult situations. And in England, when I first went there in 1977, the English Sangha Trust, the organization that invited me, there was a lot of disagreement in the meetings, and I was expected to solve all their problems. I don't know. I didn't know what was going on most of the time, and there were two sides, and they both were, I mean, wouldn't believe how angry these people can be. And So you're sitting there and you're feeling, I don't want to be here. I want to go back to Thailand. I want to go back to Wat Nonatah. And I promised Nungpa Chai I wouldn't go back for 5 years. So, you know, I have to keep my promise. And so then, and on an emotional level, I was being swayed, taking sides. And because I preferred one group over another. And then, one afternoon, you know, I was walking down Haverstock Hill, which is a busy street in northwest London, and the Sound of Silence suddenly attacked me. Like it just came overwhelmingly. Suddenly I remembered it. I'd kind of forgotten it, about it, and it was so, emotionally so caught up in this frustrating situation. So I used it in the meeting, these acrimonious meetings, to get perspective, because it allowed me to listen, to hear what was going on, and at the same time be aware of my emotional reactions to what I'm listening to, what I'm hearing, what I'm experiencing. It gave me perspective because I embraced the moment of both the. I could pay attention to what people were saying and how what they were saying affected me emotionally. But the awareness was the refuge rather than some biased position. So it gave me a lot of confidence in how to deal with difficult scenes and situations. That we all have to experience as human beings, but integrating it into daily life is the real challenge. So, like retreats are highly recommended. It gives you special conditions that are conducive to. Towards of stillness, awareness, silence, without a lot of your daily life demands, or you're not at your own home, you're at here in the meditation hall, so you aren't looking around to see what needs to be done. You know, your duties to sit still, walk, stand and walk, lie down with mindfulness, wisdom. But then also it gives you more confidence to apply this to the daily lives you live. So I'll end the reflection here.